We're celebrating summer with 40 Thrive's top 10 episodes of season two. From body changes to career changes, mindset shifts to creating habits that will improve, well, pretty much everything. These episodes will make you think, laugh, and definitely grow as a grown-ass woman over 40 and beyond. This time, number 9.
You're listening to the 40 Thrive Podcast, the show created for women 40 and beyond, ready to shake things up. And now, your host, Jackie McDougall.
Welcome back to another episode of 40 Thrive. I'm so happy you're here. Let me ask you this. Have you subscribed to 40 Thrive yet? If you haven't, hit that subscribe, favorite, or follow button, depending on where you listen. You will never have to search for the show again. It'll just be automatically updated. It's a win-win. Before we dive into all the greatness, this episode and our entire top 10 of season two is brought to you by Kindra. As I'm recording this, I am hearing from so many women all over who are not only trying to beat the heat outside, my gosh, it's hot, but from within. Hot flashes, night sweats, it is real. But did you know that suffering is not actually required? Let me say that again. Suffering could be a choice you're making. Mood swings, vaginal dryness, sleepless nights, they can all be addressed, and sometimes pretty simply. That's why I'm teaming up with Kindra this summer. They have estrogen-free perimenopause and menopause essentials designed by women for you. And when they say estrogen-free, they really mean it, as in 0% estradiol or progesterone. If you're feeling overheated, tired, sluggish, can't sleep, or experience vaginal dryness that's just getting in the way of the life you know you could be living, Kindra has a whole suite of products to help. And you can get 20% off Kindra site-wide with promo code 40thrive20 at checkout. That's ourkindra.com with promo code 40thrive20, FORTYTHRIVE, and the number 20. Go get it. You could be feeling so much better sooner than you can even imagine. All right. So if you're a woman who's excited to see what's next, maybe make a pivot in your career, or even, dare I say, put yourself out there, today's guest can help you big time. Juju Hook helps primetime women, that's us, build brands. Juju is a consultant, coach, and a speaker. For more than a quarter century, she developed brand strategy for corporations. Today, through online programs, live events, and one-to-one coaching, Juju motivates, inspires, and educates primetime women in topics related to business, life, and relationships. Juju is also the author of Hot Flashes, Carpools, and Dirty Martinis, the quintessential guide for turning midlife into primetime. In this episode, we talk breakthrough breakdowns. Oh yeah, that's a thing. 6 lies we've come to believe about aging and the 50-hour rule. So much more. It's a great, great conversation. All right, let's get into the conversation I had with Juju Hook. Juju, welcome to 40 Thrive.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, we had to actually stop and I had to go, wait, I have to record because you're one of those people that I think we could have gotten off and running and talked for an hour.
I suspect, yep. Yeah, we'll be talking for an hour at some point when all this is over anyway, right? That's how it always works.
Exactly. The first thing I noticed was your hair is much longer than the photos you have on your website.
Yes.
And you said it's because of COVID.
Because of COVID. Yeah. Because I live in California and they shut down hair salons here and then they open them for a half a minute and then they shut them down again. And so everyone in our house has long hair. My husband has a crazy beard and it was mandated.
Right.
And now I'm owning it.
Excellent. And then when I complimented your hair, you said when you cut it, it was, this is the fascinating, this is the juice right here.
Yeah, right. So I cut my hair some years ago and I had really long, curly, kind of rock and roll hair.
Love it.
And I cut it off and I cut it really short. First, I cut it kind of into a little bob. And at that point, my son was, I don't know, he must have been 11 or 12. And he was furious. You know, he was like, you know, you used to look like a regular mom and now you just look like a teenager. And it was really interesting reaction.
That's funny.
And then I cut it super short. And I remember thinking at that time, this is the last time I'll ever have long hair. And I think I just sort of bought into this, what I call the lie of impropriety, right? In the moment, like women of a certain age don't have long hair, which is just total nonsense, right? It's just BS.
It's crazy. Does that happen to you a lot? Because I noticed that where I'm like, oh, the rule is, it's kind of like it used to be white after Labor Day.
Yes.
And now it's like all the things that you're not allowed to do if you're over 40 or over 50, they're such crap.
Well, they really are. And I think the thing I buy into more, that because I really try to fight this, right? And I wrote a book about this. So you think that I wouldn't be falling into it.
Right.
But what I fall into more are things that are perceived as problems, right? Like the anti-aging industry, they talk about our problem areas. And it's not a problem that I'm 54. Like, it's just really not a problem. Right. And as long as they continue to message this way, right? We all think that we have problems every year that we grow older, and we don't. So I think everybody falls into it. I think you have to be really vigilant about rebranding and rebranding and rebranding yourself so that other people don't do it for us.
Right. That's the quotable right there. We got to rebrand ourselves so other people don't do it.
Yeah, because they will.
They really will.
And they'll brand us by what they want to sell us.
Yes. I mean, that's sales 101, right? So I have, you know, the group that you just joined, I believe, our 40 Thrive group. And there are plenty of women in there who are coaches in their own right. And I see them come in and say, like, what's your problem when it comes to working out? Like, why aren't you working out? Or what do you think is your biggest, like, they basically are following some sort of online human who has taught them to trigger
pain,
all the issues, pain points,
right? Which is a terrible thing to, I've been in marketing my whole life.
Same.
And I've been taught this too, right? You got to get into people's pain. But the truth is, you know, we're all solving problems for people, right? And our brains are wired to solve problems. If we don't have a problem to solve, we'll make one up.
Right.
We've all been there too, right? God knows, the longer I spend alone with myself, the more shit's wrong in my life, right? But I think that the question isn't really what's your pain point. It's how can I serve you, right? How can I be here for you? And I think the pain point thing, even when you're doing it, even when you're taught to do it, it feels sneaky and sticky. And especially for coaches, our whole purpose is to make people more resilient and more independent. That's the whole goal. So starting with the pain, that's kind of a sneaky place to start.
It is. And the thing is, don't get me wrong, a lot of these strategies work, right?
Of course.
And that's why people are life coaches all over the place.
Right.
At the same time, just like the messaging that you were just talking about, like, I don't think it's enough to call out the messaging where the marketing that says we have problem areas or something's a problem. We have to really vocalize it.
Yeah.
Talk about it with each other, because it's not enough for me to know that what they're saying on TV or in this internet ad is BS. It's my job, I feel, to like call it out.
Absolutely.
And say to other women, have you fallen for this too? Like, raise your hand, because if we don't talk about it, we're all going to fall to it.
Well, and here's the thing too, like the whole phrase anti-aging, right, is nonsense, because none of this shit is designed to help us live longer.
Right.
$350 billion is the size of this industry.
Right.
And every single thing they produce is designed to make us look like we've lived fewer years than we have.
Right.
Which none of us needed before they invented it.
Right.
Like, my mom had day cream and night cream. I don't ever remember my mom having problem areas. I don't ever remember her talking about any of that. And it's not like I think everybody should throw away their Spanx or never get fillers. I don't have any of those thoughts. But the idea that we would do it because somebody told us we had a problem.
Right.
Or that the older we get, the less we're worth, which is essentially what this message perpetuates, right? You better do something about this, because if you don't do something about this, everybody will know how old you are.
Right.
You don't want that to happen.
Right.
Right.
And the second you open your mouth, everyone knows how old you are.
Of course.
Because you know some things.
Yeah. So that, and that's the whole point, right? We get more and more vital and stronger and more able and agile. And all of that messaging just flies in the face of that. And it's really sad that we have to come out and fight against it. It's work we should never have to do.
Right. Right. I do see a lot of brands now going for like the pro aging.
Yes.
I did an interview recently with Fumiko from Face Yoga Method. I got to tell you, I admitted it on this podcast, but like, I resisted having her on for quite a while, because I was like, face yoga is just another thing to spend money on. Okay, it makes perfect sense. Like, we do yoga for our bodies. I know you're like certified in yoga. So you right?
I am. Yeah.
So you care about yoga.
Yeah, I do.
But so she's doing this yoga for your face. And I'm like, if you can tone up your body, like that makes sense. So that to me, she calls it pro aging. She's just like, hey, have a healthy face.
Of course.
Get more collagen and make it plumper and.
Yeah. Embrace it. Make the most of it.
Right.
Be pro aging. Anti-aging is like being anti-green grass or anti-blue sky. Like it is a thing.
Right.
How can you be against it? And everybody has it.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it.
Anti-aging is death.
It really is. It really is, until somebody discovers a thing that's going to make us live longer, right? And I do think that there are people who are really dedicated to this idea of being as healthy and as vibrant as we can so we can live as long as we can.
Yes.
But I don't think they're calling that anti-aging. And I don't think they're focusing on problems.
Right.
Right? Focusing on maximizing wellness is the opposite of pain points.
Yeah. I mean, the people that I see, the women I see, and I've talked about this on many episodes where she walks into the room and you're like, whoa. And it's not that she's the prettiest or the youngest. It's there's something. And it's because she's living well.
Yeah.
And by living well, I don't necessarily just mean eating, you know, kale shakes every day, but that could be part of it. But maybe she's taking some vitamins. Maybe she's in love. Maybe she enjoys her family. Maybe she takes long walks and some time for herself. Like that's usually the woman that I'm like, oh, I want to be like her.
I think there's nothing sexier than pursuit. And it's funny because I said this on stage and I think it's the most quoted I've ever been for anything, which is that there's nothing sexier than a woman who knows her worth and is in hot pursuit of what she wants.
Yeah.
And I tell women all the time, you know, you can spend $500 on Botox and that's fine. But you can also spend $500 learning how to do something new or learning how to make money in a new way or opening yourself up to something that turns you on. And when you do, you'll be much sexier than if you get the Botox and it'll last a whole heck of a lot longer.
Right. I agree. And it shows on the face. It shows everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and you're happier. So, So let's talk about this book.
Yes.
Hot Flashes, Carpools and Dirty Martinis, The quintessential guide for turning midlife into prime time. Now, as someone with a TV background, I like the prime time, you know.
Yeah, that's where it came from for me too. I bought a lot of advertising for a lot of clients.
Oh, on primetime TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were living the same life.
Yeah, I owned an agency for many years and I got to a point, 47-ish, where I had made it through the recession of 2008, 2009. And at that point, I took my agency virtual. And I was a strategist and I had done that thing that we all want to do where I'd sort of achieved making a great amount of money without having to put in a great amount of effort anymore.
Mm.
Right? Like I had a great team in place and I could show up and just do the strategy and I had great clients and everything had just sort of clicked. And I found out that I was going to lose a really big client. I knew they were going to go. And I just had these thoughts of, I'm not going to be able to replace this client because I'm almost 50 and I'm going to have to go out. I'm going to have to compete against younger agencies. I'm going to have to put a navy blue suit on and go back in the boardroom. And I just had this kind of sense of panic and it was kind of an undoing, to be honest, through the course of a kind of one of those breakthrough breakdowns. You know how you have those? Like an ugly cry with dirty martinis night.
Breakthrough breakdowns.
Yeah. Like sometimes you really have to just kind of lose it.
Yes.
To recognize that you've been losing it all along, right?
Right.
So I was very overly involved in my teenage son's life. That was one of the ways that I was coping with my feelings of irrelevance. I was just sort of skating by and I had a confrontation with my son's principal about my son. And he said, I don't think this is about him. I think this is about you.
Ooh.
And I loved this man. He was someone who knew me well. And he challenged me to go do something I was terrified of. He said, I think you should go do something you're terrified of. I don't think Christian needs you anymore in the way that you want to be needed. And it was a real confronting moment. But it led me to the realization that I'd never really given myself a chance, that I had designed a whole life writing, which I was really good at, but writing words for other people. Like the number of words I've written about anti-lock brakes or individual retirement accounts or just, you know, nonsense, right? Then I realized I had something to say. It was the first time. And I thought, if I don't do this now, I'm never going to do it. And this is it. This is my 8 to 11 time slot, right? I'm ready. I'm as smart as I've ever been. I'm as experienced as I've ever been. I have something to say.
Yep.
And it just kind of sent me on a journey. And so I talked to, I don't know how many midlife women in preparation for the book. And that's where I ended up.
Wow. And so it's a variety of stories that people told you or?
Yes.
I linked to the book in the show notes and I ordered my own copy, but it hasn't arrived. Amazon has failed me this year, but that's a whole different podcast episode.
I'll send you a copy.
Thanks.
It's six lies that we have come to believe about aging. The lie of irrelevance, the lie of impropriety,
yep.
which we just talked about, the lie of diminishing capacity. Mm. Like I talk to women who have this belief literally like that they're like light bulbs. You can turn me on so many times, but now I'm older and I'm, you know, these kinds of things that we believe. And so I introduce the lies, but I also talk about three math problems that women have issues with. Equations. My thoughts equal truth, which is
false.
Absolute BS.
Yeah.
Right? Like your thoughts are not truth. They're just happenings, like a door slamming or lightning striking. Don't believe them. Right? And my feelings equal facts, which is also real problematic.
Yep. It's like the cousin of thoughts equal truth. Yeah.
All related, right? Really vicious cycle. And my past is the reliable predictor of my future. And I think once we realize that none of those things are true, and then on top of it, we recognize that we're literally being fed messaging that forms our thoughts and our feelings and our understanding of what the future is going to look like. I introduce a lot of the primetime women in my own life, my mom, my friend, you know, women who I love that really stepped into primetime in different ways.
Right.
And so it's just sort of an inside look into my experience around it. And it was really well received. I mean, women really liked it. It set me off on a whole new life. I walked away from my agency and I help only primetime women build brands. And it's just a beautiful way to spend the day.
Yeah. And it's fantastic. And first it was the book and then it was like the whole life shift.
Yeah.
And so I think so many women, you know, they've got the post-its on the wall and they're trying to map out the whole life shift.
Yeah.
And not just doing that first step, taking that first step with a book, you know, and a book is a big deal. Don't get me wrong.
It was a big deal.
But you didn't map out the rest of your life in this book.
No, in fact, it was really interesting. I learned a really valuable lesson after the book because my thought was that I was going to start over, right? In fact, I told my husband, I don't want to do this agency thing anymore, right? Which is, you know, his jaw drops because I was doing a really great job at it. And he said, well, what do you think you want to do? And I said, I think I want to be a motivational speaker. And he said, well, what does that look like? And I said, I don't know. And he said, how long do you think it will take you to replace the income that you have now? And I said, if you give me 5 years, I think I can figure it out. And I did. That was my thought. I don't know where that came from, but that's what I thought. And so after I wrote the book, I went and joined a collective of women to speak, to learn to speak, right? And to get on stages and to talk about this concept of prime time. And what happened was I was in this kind of sisterhood. And everyone was writing these sort of TED-style talks. And there were a whole bunch of women that were really struggling writing their talk because they didn't understand their brands. And so I ended up participating in this way in the group of, you know, well, let's figure out your messaging and let's da-da-da-da-da, right? And from that, it became really apparent that I wasn't starting over at all.
Right.
I was just pivoting. I was just applying my mastery in a new way. And I think so many women in midlife need that.
Yeah.
We need to contribute on a different level or in a different way. And we don't have to start over. We can take all the stuff that we know and deliver it in a different way. And so, I had to do the book first. You have to go through stuff and try it on, right? Figure it out as you go.
Exactly. Like we sit here trying to plan, you know, map it all out and you have to just kind of jump.
You do.
And try something. But, you know, just to, real quick to your other point, if I hear the word reinvention, and I apologize if it's in any of your stuff, but like reinvention to me is starting over. It's like you're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
To me, it's more about innovation.
Yeah. I don't really promote reinvention. I promote new forms of delivery. I promote a pivot.
Yeah.
Really. Because,
because
most of the time when we're sick of something or we're over something, we're not over the mastery that we've created, the skill set that we have.
Exactly.
We're over the way we spend our day or the people that we spend it with or the activities that we're doing. Right. And everything that I needed to know to create strategy for AutoNation is the same thing I need to know to create strategy with primetime women. But before, I spent my day leading creative teams and, you know, having corporate meetings. And now I spend my day talking to my girlfriends all day.
Right. About the same things, though, about how to put themselves out there.
Yeah, I didn't reinvent myself. I didn't go out and learn something new. I didn't become someone different. I just decided. I made a conscious choice about how I wanted to spend my day.
Right. I look at the same thing with my TV background. 25 plus years in TV. Now I'm teaching podcasting. I'm coaching, you know, creatively and putting themselves out there. But it's not that it's necessarily reinvention. It's innovation.
Yep.
It's like, oh, what does the marketplace require now that feels good with who I am now?
Yes. And how do I want to contribute?
Yeah.
The other thing I think that's a real issue for women around the problem thing is menopause. Mm-hmm. Not only are we fed that the older we get, the less we're worth, but we're also fed that menopause is sickness.
Yes.
Right?
It's a diagnosis.
This is a thing. It's a sickness, right? Nobody ever told us that when we started to menstruate. Can you imagine if somebody said, oh my God, you're 13 now and it's going to be downhill from here?
You were diagnosed with your period.
Yes. It's all over. So, but one of the things that really happens when our bodies stop needing to mother, whether or not we have kids, because we're all mothering stuff our whole lives, right? Whether or not we ever have kids, is that we feel this call to contribute. Mm-hmm. And it's that call to contribute in different ways. Like maybe we want to contribute to the community or to society or to politics or to charity or to a specific group of people. And it's that call to contribution that really allows the innovation or the pivot, right? It's like, how do I take all of this stuff that I'm good at now and contribute to the world in a way that turns me on? Mm-hmm. And that, when you watch women do that, it's just really a powerful thing. I always joke that if you really need to solve a problem, you call a 50-year-old woman. Like if you have to bury a body, you would never call a 30-year-old man. You would call a 50-year-old woman. You'd be like, I'm in trouble. I need you to keep a secret. I need you to help me. But, you know, figure this out, right? And so we
just
know.
Just for the record, no bodies were harmed in the making of this podcast episode. Everything's okay.
That's right. Everyone's good.
You're right. We are, and I say that all the time. I mean, if you listen to one episode of this, like, I believe midlife is a superpower.
Totally.
You know, we talk about invisibility like it's something that we came into, but yet if you ask someone like, which superpower would you like to have? Speed, you know, flight or invisibility. Yet we become 50 and we're like, oh, I'm invisible. It's like, dude, you've been calling that your superpower all this time. Use it.
Well, and you know what? I don't feel invisible at all.
No.
I feel prettier than I've ever been.
Yeah. Well, you are gorgeous.
Well, thank you. And I can tell you, I didn't feel gorgeous when I was 25.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel gorgeous when I was 35.
Yeah.
Something happened to me in midlife where I just decided I was going to do whatever it took to feel gorgeous. And I don't know. Do you know who Elizabeth Fox and Duke is?
I don't think so.
So she'd be a great woman to have on your show. She's an amazing coach. And when I first started coaching, I followed her. And she essentially has programs where she talks to women who are crazy around food and just in different ways, right? Who have issues around food.
Yes, I have heard of her. Now I'm realizing, connecting it.
The program that I first signed up for, the headline said, how not to eat cake really, really fast standing up at your counter while no one's watching. And I was like, oh my God, that's me, right? Like there's a pain point right there. It was one of those real sort of sell them what they want and then give them what they need things.
Yes.
And I can remember getting behind the paywall and she asked this question, what would happen if you never lost any weight, but you just felt really great about the size that you are? Mm. And that was such a foreign concept to me. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was done and really had come to embrace the health in any size movement and really understood what it meant, not to, you know, I don't always love my body, but it's my body.
Right.
And I'm going to rock it.
It's the only one we get.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have done that, you know, 15 years ago. And I know women say that they feel invisible and that they walk into a room and nobody looks. And I think that's back to what you and I were talking about earlier. It's back to how you carry yourself in the room. And if you think you're hot shit, everybody else will think you're hot shit too.
Yeah.
It's just how it works.
Have you ever had one of those days where you feel like you're looking good and you walk into a restaurant and you notice that people notice?
People look at you, yes.
And you know that you're not the prettiest person or the skinniest person or whatever, the-ist person. But for some reason, you're like, I think I feel good, and people are taking notice.
That happens to me now more often than it ever did when I was young.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that, when you decide you're going to show up in that way, you give all these other women permission to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're much worse to each other sometimes than men are to us, you know, in terms of being competitive and catty and all this kind of stuff. You know, like I just did a photo shoot for a launch that I did on Black Friday, and the photographer was just amazing. And she was a primetime woman too. Through the whole shoot, she just made me feel like $1 million. Mm. She just set it all up to make me feel as pretty and powerful as she could. And then when the pictures came back, I'm as big as I've ever been. Mm-hmm. I don't wear a small size. Before the shoot, she sent me a thing with sample outfits. Mm. And said, your pictures aren't going to look good unless you wear clothes that really fit. So I wore tight clothes. Mm-hmm. And the pictures came out and I put them up on Facebook and I put them in the launch and people were like, wow, you are wearing that dress, right? And I would have not done that. Had she not told me to do that, I wouldn't have done it. And I think people don't notice size.
Yeah.
There, people aren't attracted to size. In fact, I don't think there's any such thing as normative attractive, right? This is another kind of line of BS that we believe that there's attractive people and there's unattractive people. And that's not true. Attraction's singular.
Right. Interesting.
And so you don't have to be attractive. You just have to show yourself completely so the people who are attracted to your type can decide that they want you.
Right.
Right. As if you're covering it up or hiding it or disliking it or trying to fix it, which is what we're doing all the time, right? Trying to fix ourselves.
Absolutely. And the same thing goes for when you share your voice.
For sure.
You know, if you're not committed to showing up as yourself, people can feel it. Even if they don't understand that they're hearing it, they feel it.
I think one thing that I've learned about women, and this is something I work with a lot of women on, is that where voice is concerned, we don't always know how to show up as ourselves because we haven't always had a platform for voice.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I work with women on is how to understand what's your essence of influence, right? Like what's a natural way for you to show up? Like I have women that I work with who it's very natural for them to show up as scientists. Mm. They want to present data. They feel confident doing that. And I have women I work with who want to show up as reporters. They don't really want to be the expert. They want to go find the experts and talk about it. And so I think when you really dig and find what's your natural essence of influence, then you can stay in your voice.
Right.
But a lot of women have not had a platform for voice their whole life. Yeah. And most of us were told at some point that we were too big, not to take up so much space, right?
Oh, yeah. Extra.
Extra. When I was young, I can remember my mom saying to me, I'd be playing with my girlfriends or with my brothers. My mom would say, you are the only one I can hear.
Yes.
And I remember that was such a bad thing, right? If someone told me that now, I'd be like, a winning.
I'd be telling the other women to speak up.
Yeah, I trained my whole life for this.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's natural for women to step into voice and high visibility.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's strange because I am a podcast coach, but I don't believe that every woman should start a podcast. I don't believe that every woman's voice is the same.
No, I don't think so either.
Like that you should be public with your voice. For example, like we order takeout every Friday night. And so I say, if you're a woman who orders takeout every Friday night with your family, and not once have you ever put in your vote for what you want to eat dinner?
Yes, totally.
That could be finding your voice.
Yes. I have women who tell me that they got divorced, and when they got divorced, they discovered what they like to eat.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is that crazy?
It goes back to that, like the Runaway Bride movie, you know, where she ate the eggs of basically the guys that she was with, and that she had a whole plate of eggs after to figure out what kind of eggs she liked. So yeah, absolutely. Or like there are women who are so badass and amazing and impactful and influential who want to run for maybe the local school board.
Yes.
You know, just something like that,
yes.
Or have some sort of nonprofit presence in their communities, whatever it is, like finding your voice is so different. Obviously, the women that you work with are looking to be a little bit more public with what they know and what they do.
I think the women who I work with are coming to the realization, especially now that we're all kind of literally our network is limited physically, right? That having some kind of presence, some kind of digital presence or platform or whatever is going to be necessary in order for them to amplify. They're not going to be able to amplify their impact or their income if they don't do it.
Right.
But it's just like you said, everybody doesn't need to start a podcast. And we get these crazy pieces of advice. Like one of the earliest pieces of advice I got was you should do a Facebook Live every day for 100 days. This is one of the first things people told me, right? I hated video. And I'm a writer. I've written my whole life. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't tell me to start a blog. I was already good at that.
Yeah.
So here I am going for visibility for the first time, feeling nervous about it, wondering if people are really going to listen to what I want to say. And I'm fighting through a medium that's not natural for me.
Yep.
So I think the way we show our voice, but also how we show up and how we build that platform, that's really unique to our essence.
Right. And why would you work against your essence?
Totally. And all of these things are just tactics and everybody's selling a tactic.
Yes.
Right. And if you don't have a strategy, then you don't know what tactics to use. Mm-hmm. So this kind of throw it against the wall and see what sticks stuff around the tactics is a lot of the times the reason women don't succeed at these things is because they don't make them their own. They're afraid to wiggle with it.
Right.
I bet you I did 50 webinars before I ever sold anything live.
Yeah, they're hard.
They're hard. And what happened for me is that I needed a feedback loop.
Yes.
Like I really feed off the energy of the people who are in front of me. When you do a webinar, there's no one in front of you.
Yeah.
So I would get 35, 40 minutes in and these thoughts in my head would be like, oh my God, no one's listening to me anymore. I'm wasting their time. Yeah. They're all, you know, painting their nails and da, 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 da. And they could feel that.
Yep.
And then I asked someone to interview me through my podcast. Mm. And as soon as I did, everything changed.
Amazing.
Because I needed that loop. I needed to see the eyes and have the head nod and all of that. And I think there's not a lot of that going on in terms of women owning it, rocking what's theirs, you know, to rock.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I did a webinar one time. The thing is, if you're not familiar with this whole world, so one of the things in the 40 Thrive group, I gave them a poll of like what kind of content they're looking for.
Yeah.
And a lot of like entrepreneurship, creative cash flow is at the top.
Yep.
And so I'm bringing more episodes like this. This is perfect.
Yep.
So if you're not familiar, a webinar is oftentimes used to get people in for free and then you kind of upsell them into something bigger. Mm-hmm. And if they're impressed with your webinar skills, like with what you've offered them.
Yes.
And they're like, wow, this is pretty valuable. Sure, I want to be in. So it depends on whose webinar you're going to follow. A lot of them are just sales where I'm like, you gave me nothing.
Right.
But I purposely, in my webinar, try to help a person either understand that they, yes, I do want to start a podcast, mm-hmm. or maybe podcasting isn't for me because I don't necessarily want to work with that person who's like, nah, because it's harder work.
Yeah, you have to keep reselling it after you sell it, right? Yeah,
I don't want your money if you don't want to do this because it makes my job really icky and uncomfortable. And so I don't want to do that. But I did a webinar and a lot of people want the replay after. They don't show up live necessarily.
Yes.
Guess how many people I had on live?
How many?
I'll help you out. Zero.
Oh, I've had that.
I had zero people on live. This was a couple of years ago. Thankfully, it hasn't happened since. But it was a couple of years ago. I only had one option was to do the webinar.
Yes.
I had to continue to do the webinar even though nobody was there because people want the replay.
Yes. So did you pretend that people were there?
Oh, I totally pretended people were there. I was answering questions from like Megan in Omaha. Uh-huh. And I was making shit up all day, every day.
Yep. I've been there.
And again, yes, it's a sales tactic, but also the way I designed it, it had valuable content. Mm-hmm. I instead changed it to a challenge where people come into the Facebook group and I do a little 30 minutes a day for 5 days or whatever.
Yeah.
That was much better because you could see who's there. You got to find what works best for you in everything you do.
And I think you have to recognize that it's a series of actions and course corrections. Like we were talking earlier about confidence. And
yes.
Confidence comes in an action loop, right? Like you can't really be confident until you take action.
Yep.
And that, but you feel like you can't take action until you're confident. So you have to do this one little piece. And we have this understanding of everything in terms of pass fail, like, oh, I did it and I failed. And then you see all these people who are talking about failing forward or fail as fast as you can. And I think really what it is you take an action and then you learn and then you course correct mm-hmm. and you act and you learn and you course correct. I'm not great with data. I'm an intuitive.
Yeah.
I don't mean I'm an intuitive in the way
you're not
an intuitive really is. I'm not a psychic. No. But I trust my intuition more than I do data.
Same.
My husband says just because I ignore facts doesn't mean that they don't really exist.
So I love him.
So when I got into internet marketing, it's all conversion driven. It's all data driven.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me because I didn't understand the conversion. So I had to get help with that part. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to make it your own.
Yeah.
I took Amy Porterfield's.
Yeah. Webinars that convert or something.
And here I'm, you know, I'm 25 years in marketing. Like if Amy Porterfield can do it, surely I can do it, right? Yeah. This is what I thought foolishly. And I was so sure that I was going to have all these calls that I had my nephew, who's a salesperson, and my best friend who sells cars come to my house. Okay. It's for backup.
Standing by.
Yeah, standing
operators
by.
Are standing by.
I had a meat and cheese platter for them. Okay. Nothing. Crickets. Nothing, right? They still tease me about it. They're like, oh, are you going to get a meat and cheese platter? So I think you have to recognize you act and then you course correct and you act and you course correct. And that's the way it goes. That's how the pivot goes, right?
Totally. And I think that there are so many people who are afraid of getting it wrong.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been in that boat that you're so afraid to get it wrong that you don't do it at all.
Yes.
You can have all the map in the world, but if you don't show up and be willing to make mistakes, what's the point?
Yeah. And I think we get really caught up. Like I do an intensive with women over a year. And I had a woman last year who said, well, I sent out these emails and they didn't work. Right. So in her mind, she had sort of launched. And now what was she supposed to do? Now everyone can see that she failed. I said, well, what percentage of people open the email? And she's like, well, I have a list of 2,000 people so far and 10% of the people open the email. And I go, okay, that's 200 people. Why don't we rename the email and send it to the 1,800 who didn't open it? Mm. Right? They have no idea what happened in that email. They didn't even open it.
Right.
And the same way with you doing a webinar to zero people. There was nobody there to see you mess up.
Right.
So you just do it again. You just keep doing it until you figure it out.
Yes.
And we can do that because we're middle-aged women and we've been through way harder things than that.
Well, that's exactly right. I see so many women starting businesses or, you know, moving their business online. I mean, 2020 has changed so many things.
Yeah.
Most often, the women who are most fearful have been through so much shit.
Oh my gosh, way harder stuff.
Right?
And when have you ever done anything hard and gotten it right the first time?
Right.
It's like if you said to someone, here, I'm going to give you a piano lesson. And at the end, you'll play a song. Everyone would know that was nonsense, right?
Right.
But somebody says, I'm going to teach you how to do a webinar, and you have this expectation that at the end of it, you're going to be Amy Porterfield.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Even Amy Porterfield wasn't Amy Porterfield. I had her, actually, I'll link to the episode in the show notes. She's an online marketing guru, and she teaches people how to make online courses and all that good stuff. I had Amy on the show months and months ago. And she didn't start off as Amy Porterfield.
No, of course not. Of course not. The reason you have something to teach people is because you paid the beginner's tax.
Right.
Right? You went through it.
Yes. But one of the things that drives me crazy with other people who are out there, they're like, I have failed and failed and failed. And now I'm going to teach you the 5 secrets to massive success.
That's
and like
my
those
point. Yes.
5 secrets may be really valuable. But at the same time, it was the blood, the sweat, the tears, the mistakes, the failures, all of that that got them where they are.
Yeah.
Not just those 5 secrets.
No. And I think this secrets thing is really interesting. And I have women all the time who tell me they need to do things. They're engaging in activities. And I'll say, why are you doing that? How's that working for you? Right.
Yeah.
And they don't know why they're doing it. They're doing it because someone told them that's what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
And so I think this understanding around reliable, sustainable income comes from systems. And systems are built from little pieces that we validate that they work. Mm-hmm. Right. So now I know I can get a lead because I validated this will work. People will sign up. Right. And now that I've got the lead, can I get them to listen to me, right? And if they'll listen to me for a half hour, then can I make a cogent sales pitch? Mm-hmm. And when I learn to make a cogent sales pitch, can I get them on the telephone, right? Can I have a discovery call? And when we nail each one of these little things through trial, course correction, we can build a system that we can rely on. But if we don't do all of that, it's just a crapshoot.
Yeah, you're right. And what's interesting, what's really standing out for me is that you're trying out each step.
Yeah.
each individual step, whether you're starting a new business, you're getting online, whatever it is you're doing, like each step is individual. And so you really have to check the data as much as we're not data people.
Yes, you got to look at the data. What's working.
Yes,
yeah.
For each
step. And I watch women do this. They say to me, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to build a course and then I'm going to make an opt-in and I'm going to get an email list. I'm going to build a course. I'm going to do a webinar and I'm going to sell it. And then they go off in the lab and they do all of that and it doesn't work and they don't know which part didn't work.
Right.
I mean, you don't know if you have a course that no one wants to buy, or you just don't know how to make a sales pitch, or you have no idea.
Right.
So each part we have to test, and we have to be resilient enough to say, I don't know how to do this.
Right.
Right. But I've mastered all of these things. So all I'm really learning is a new technique to deliver that.
Exactly. And there's so many people out there as far as like your program to help people position themselves and all of the things that you teach. It's not one size fits all.
Nope.
Some people may already have a brand and they just don't know how to deliver it in a new way, like you were just saying.
Yeah.
The other thing too is I see a lot of people who will sign up to learn how to do a course and then they're like, oh, I created this course. Well, first of all, if no one knows about it, what's the point? Mm-hmm. But secondly, I was podcast launch coaching live groups for 2.5 to 3 years.
Before you made a course.
Before I made a course. Because real live people who are like, I don't understand what you're saying, or I get that, but what I really struggle with is this, like, you need that feedback so you can create a course that responds to what real people.
Yeah. You know, if you're solving a real problem that people will pay for, right? Like this is really at the core of having a business. Can I solve a specific problem for a specific group of people that they're willing to pay for?
Exactly.
When we nail that.
It's that simple.
Right? So now I know.
Yep.
Okay. Now I've got a proven concept.
Yep.
Okay. Then the question becomes, how do I sell it? And I think we do this kind of backwards. Instead, we do this. And the reason we do it is because people teach us that.
Yeah.
They say, Thursday, I lived in my mom's basement. And Wednesday, I have a mansion and a yacht because I made an online course about how to jump rope, right? You know how to jump rope, or you have an amazing skill. You can make an online course and you'll be rich by Wednesday too, right?
Yes.
This is what they tell us.
Yes.
And all of the truth is missing.
Mm-hmm.
So just like the anti-aging stuff, right? When you recognize this is how the message is structured, this is what these people want from me. There's nuggets in here. There's learning to do, but expectations are out of whack.
I believe almost anyone can create a course or some sort of online workshop or something.
Agreed.
And monetize it.
Especially a midlife woman.
Yes. I was recently talking to a woman. She actually did my painting and she does furniture. She takes old pieces of furniture that she's found at thrift stores and stuff. And, you know, you see a lot of people doing it.
Yep.
I have a couple of pieces in my office that I did myself and I would not be selling those. Let's just say.
You're not going to make an online course about it?
Yeah, no. But I had a conversation with her and I said, you know, do a Zoom workshop.
Yep.
Give people the list of materials that they need. Have them buy it. First of all, it's affiliate. So she makes a little bit of money off of that. And then how many weeks do you need? Is it 4 weeks every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you only want 5 people to start because you want to be able to see the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But do it live like that.
Yes.
And at some point, you can then put it onto online modules that you just sell the course.
Yep.
It's so hot right now, you know, the painting old furniture.
Well, because people don't have anything to do, right? We're all stuck in our houses with nothing to do. I bought a paint by number. My son laughed out loud at me. He's like, what is that?
I'm like, was it Garfield or something?
I don't have anything to do.
Was it an upside down cat that's hanging there?
And I never did it. I rolled it right back up and it was a nice idea when I ordered it. And then when I got it, I knew I'm not going to do this.
Oh, it's a nice Christmas present.
But I think this idea of sort of having a beta group is a really safe idea. And I had a lot of women in my immersion program do that. I had a woman who actually was an intuitive, a clairvoyant.
Yeah.
But she was also a trauma therapist for 25 years. And she didn't want to be a trauma therapist anymore. It really took a lot out of her. And so it was really interesting during COVID that we had all these powerful women in leadership positions who were all relying on data because we've been taught to rely on data and not our intuition. And all of a sudden they have no data.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to kind of move in and do a beta group and say, hey, let me teach you how to use your intuition when you have no data available. And it was really great because she had a small group. Women had an opportunity to tell her, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what's expected of me. This is where I'm really getting tripped up. And because she created it as she went, she didn't have all these crazy expectations of herself. The women didn't have all these crazy expectations. She was honest about what she was going to do, you know, and her credentials were there. They bought because of her credentials. We all, you know, we have the credentials, but it's that, it's all that formatty kind of stuff where we pass fail rate ourselves. And I don't think that's necessary.
It's sort of like when we went to college for art history, which I did not, but then, you know, then the person gets into politics and they don't gel. I think some of us have background in a certain field and we're not really using that, but we keep holding on to that as if we need this past thing to make us valid in what we want to do.
I think we're valid in a lot more things than we give ourselves credit for as well. Like this particular woman, it was really interesting because she was a clairvoyant first and she had gone to school for it. I mean, she had been trained as a clairvoyant.
Oh, wow.
And then over time, right, was essentially convinced that that wasn't a legitimate thing to be. So she became something legitimate, right? She went back, she got her master's degree, she became a psychotherapist. She started to deal with these trauma patients that really took a lot out of her. And when I first started working with her, that was the first question was, how much of this other side of myself do I want to show? Are people going to think it's wacky? Am I only going to be able to attract woo-woo people, right? And so we were around and around it. And then when COVID started, there was this immediate need for how do I use my intuition? And not the same as being a clairvoyant, right? Like I'm not going to teach you how to be a clairvoyant. Instead, I'm going to help you solve the problem you have with the mastery that I have. I'm going to take what I know and apply it to your problem. And I have another woman who's a fifth degree black belt and teaching kids martial arts her whole life. And she's just done with it. And she was a woman who said, I'm going to begin again. And I was like, oh, you don't need to begin again. But you know how much stuff you know through this. So now she teaches women how to master their own energy.
Wow.
Really valuable, right? Like really stressed out, burnt out women who have anxiety, expectations really high, and all this stuff she learned and taught to kids. There's no new learning for her. It's just a new application, like you said, innovation.
Yeah.
And what do I do with all the stuff I know? And now she's in a space where she's just loving every day. 60 days it took.
That's awesome. And you're absolutely right. Like you have it inside you.
Yes.
It may not look the way you've been presenting it for all these years.
And then you get caught up in the, well, I'm not credentialed as a coach.
Right.
Right. This is her thought.
Right.
I said, you've been coaching people, little people, forever. Like it's the only thing you're credentialed in.
Right.
Right. But she didn't see it that way. So I think sometimes we don't recognize that we're masters.
Yeah. And she's literally a master.
A master. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And most women, by the time we're 40, we've mastered a lot.
Yes. We've just talked ourselves out of things. So I could talk to you all day. I have one more question. So I was reading a little bit about your 50-hour rule. Can you tell us what the heck is it?
Yeah. So it's not my 50-hour rule. I don't know where I picked it up initially, but it's an issue in the learning environments of the world. So it takes about 50 hours to be proficient enough at any new skill that you can enjoy it.
Oh.
So if you want to learn to golf, it takes about 50 hours of golfing or golf lessons until you can really enjoy a golf game.
Okay.
Right? If you want to play the piano, if you want to speak Spanish, whatever it is, at about 50 hours, we're proficient enough to enjoy it.
Right.
And lo and behold, there's 52 weeks in a year. So I always say to women, if you really want to learn something different, give it a year, put it an hour a week. And at the end, you'll be good enough at it that you'll enjoy it. So if you want to have a podcast or a blog or whatever, and you want to toy around with it, tinker around with it, the 50-hour rule is a really great rule.
Yeah.
And I think we overestimate what it takes to enjoy something.
Yeah, that's such a great point because one of my three sons, if he's not good at something immediately, he's just like, forget it.
Yes.
You know, and the reason I bring it up is because I think I relate to that.
So, well, that's a temperament issue. We're born with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I'm just staying true to myself.
Yes, we're born with that. It's funny. We still tease our son. Remember Transformers?
Oh, yeah. More than meets the eye.
He could never transform them. He would get them and then there would be 35 seconds of trying to turn a truck into a guy and then it would just slam it on the floor and stomp away, right? And he's 19 and he still has that same temperament as your son.
So funny.
Why can I not do this right now?
I was the same way. If I wasn't good at something right away, I just felt, it was overwhelming.
Yeah, because you evaluate yourself on it too, right? And the feeling of I'm not good at this is a very uncomfortable feeling for those of us who are achievers or who are approval seekers. And that's not the truth. It's I don't know how to do this. That's two completely different things.
So instead of saying I'm not good at this, you say,
I don't know how to do this yet.
I don't know how to do this yet.
I don't know how to do this yet. And the idea that we think we should know how to do things that we've never been taught to do is a kind of entitlement, right? Like, why are you entitled to be an expert at something you've never done before?
Right.
Because you're an expert at other things.
Right. And less judgment in the learning.
Yes.
It's often not the thoughts and feelings that are hurting us. It's the judgment of those thoughts and feelings.
Totally. And the forgetting why we did it in the first place, right? Like the reason that I decided to do this is because I wanted to have fun, because I wanted this in my life.
Right.
And we lose track of that. And some things we try and we know right away. Like I knew right away I did not want snowboarding in my life. I had 1 hour of snowboarding and I said to my husband, any task that I do that requires me to take ibuprofen when I'm finished, it's not a thing I want in my life. So there was no way I was going to do 50 hours of snowboarding.
Right.
And we don't have to be an expert at everything to enjoy things.
Yeah. I just don't like to do things I have to prep too much for. Like when I think about painting a room, I want to put the brush up once and then the room just magically appears.
Maybe you just need to hire preppers.
Yeah. Well, that's my husband. Yeah.
Perfect. That seems like a great solution. I could do your masking for you.
Excellent. See, we're a team.
We can paint a room together.
Someday after COVID, you know.
After COVID, yeah.
Thank you, Juju, for joining me.
Yeah, my divine pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. It has been possible to do this show for 2 years because of two things. Number one, you subscribe. Thank you. When you subscribe to the podcast, you never have to search for it again. You will get every episode. You'll get an alert. You can choose your favorite podcast app. It can be on your iPhone. It can be on your Android. It can be on your tablet. It can be on your home speaker. There are so many places you can subscribe to 40 Thrive so you can get it automatically. So thanks for doing that. I really appreciate it. And number two, I hope you'll consider sharing this podcast because when you share it, not only does it help us be able to continue this and to reach more people, but imagine what it would be like if all of the women in the world over 40 felt their best and were able to stand up and take charge and support each other, right? Imagine it. And so when you share the show, we are one step closer to that. So I really appreciate it. Until next time, take care and keep thriving. Spring has sprung, and with the change of seasons, sometimes comes an increase in vitality. If you're feeling in the mood for a little more personal time, may I suggest Kokanu? Kokanu is all about providing clean and natural ingredients when you're enjoying your most intimate moments, with or without a partner. Naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. Get 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/kokanu. That's 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/kokanu.